This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wade Smith sitting in for Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast. Here with Cecil Short, six-year NFL vet. Somebody tried to correct me on the text line that said that you were a seven-year vet, but I'm like, Cecil told me himself he's a six-year guy, so I don't know what to tell you. But if you want to give him an extra year, send that request into the NFL.
Absolutely.
And get that extra year of vested payment.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? I'll take that.
We'll take an extra year anytime we can. But, yeah, man, it's been a busy day in Houston sports. Of course, the Houston Rockets have traded Clint Capela to the Atlanta Hawks, and in return, they received – Robert Covington and Jacob Bell. Not Jacob Bell.
Jordan Bell.
I don't know how I got Jacob. We were talking about Jacob Martin the last segment. That's where that came from. But Jordan Bell is going to be here. Of course, the Rockets traded away Gerald Green, also Nene, and a first-round draft pick to make the deal final. We will discuss this and more with Brian Geltz-Seiler from NBA. What is it at? NBA, what is it, Jonesy?
Hoopscredit.com.
Hoopscredit.com. I can't find it in the liner. Here it goes. Yeah, he's the host of SiriusXM NBA Radio on Hoopscredit.com. So we'll talk to him in the 9:35 hour about that. But like I teased it going into the break, there's a rumbling going around, a rumor going around that Tom Brady, of course, is going to try to leave the New England Patriots, and a possible landing spot for him would be San Francisco. And so when I first heard it, I was like, man, I think that would be a perfect fit for San Fran, because Jimmy Garoppolo, from what he showed me in the Super Bowl and his playoff run, he's not ready for that shine. Tom Brady is a San Francisco kid, grew up a 49er fan. And so it makes a lot of sense, especially since Jimmy Garoppolo's contract is set up in a way that's not going to cost the 49ers a bunch of money to let him go. And so I was listening to Payne and Pendergast the other day, and Seth had a different take on the idea of Tom Brady going to San Francisco.
I don't think that's the best move for San Francisco. I think they have a lot of really good things going for them. One of the things they don't necessarily have going for them is an incredibly fast or accomplished wide receiver group. And that's been the same issue that the New England Patriots have right now. So I think that San Francisco, you'd have more to work with, but a lot of what creates opportunity in San Francisco is the outside zone run and the bootleg, that boot action.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Seth, but I couldn't disagree with you more. See, so you have any thoughts on what Seth has to
say? I'm with Seth.
Give mine, or you agree with Seth?
I'm with Seth. So the Shanahan offense and what he does good is the outside zone and the play action off of that, and being able to roll out and hit down the field. If you bring Tom Brady to the situation and get rid of Garoppolo, number one, Brady's going to retire in a year or two, so now you got to start all the way back over at quarterback. Number two, like Seth mentioned, you don't really have no – extremely, I think Deebo Samuel is going to be good, but I don't know if he's the number one right now. So you have George Kittle. I'll take that back. You do have George Kittle, who is outstanding, and he does very well, Tom Brady, with his tight ends, with Aaron Hernandez and Gronk and whoever else is there. But I just don't see a big change from Garoppolo to Tom Brady at this point in his career. I just don't. Tom Brady cannot throw the ball down the field like he used to be able to do. He's not the same guy. He's going to be a totally different system, and I think this would be a good time to see. Is he a system guy? Because he ran the same system for 20 years. If you've been in the same system, Wade, for 20-something years, you know by the back of your hand.
People say,
but he's going to go somewhere totally different now, a different system. And yes, he'll have a defense behind him, but he won't have the same weapons around him. It will not be the Tom Brady of old. Like we're expecting to see a different Tom Brady. I don't think we're going to see a different Tom Brady.
Well, listen, he had no weapons this year. Tom Brady can still spin the ball. He's a more accurate and better passer than Jimmy Garoppolo is today. And so from the 49ers' perspective, it upgrades your quarterback position. Think about it. Jimmy Garoppolo came from the exact same system that Tom Brady would be coming from, and he was able to figure it out very quickly. I believe he went 6-0 the last
game.
It's
different when you're a younger guy. You notice when you're a younger guy and you get traded somewhere, and he was there for through 3-4 years maybe, then a guy that's been there, done that, won Super Bowl, actually beat your head coach in a Super Bowl, and been there 20 years.
That sounds good, but Peyton Manning did the same thing and had a bunch of success when he left a system that he had been in his entire career and went to Denver. And he won the Super Bowl eventually with Gary Kubiak in the same scheme. So, to me, Seth brought up the fact that the receiving core was not up to snuff. The receiving core at the 49ers is much better than what the New England Patriots had and throughout there this year. And so, Tom Brady, think about that. Deebo Samuel, Emmanuel Sanders, and George Kittle is better than any combination that the New England Patriots could put out there this year. They just don't. They didn't have the weapons offensively. They had no tight end. You had Edelman, and that's it. Mm-hmm. You had one guy. And so Tom Brady, it would be an upgrade for him to have that receiving core. It would be an upgrade for him to have that running game to go with it. It's an opportunity for him to go back home. It can start his career of doing whatever he wants to do in California after he retires. And to me, Jimmy Garoppolo is not the answer. So if you can get out of having Jimmy Garoppolo and put yourself in a position to win a Super Bowl, which to me they'd be the favorites in the NFC if they got Tom Brady, I think it's a win-win for everybody. And it's the perfect situation for Tom Brady to go to.
I just don't like it. Well, let me ask you this. Would Tom Brady hit Emmanuel Sanders in that deep post in the Super Bowl? Would he have made that throw?
Well, first of all, Tom Brady would have made the throw to Kittle over the middle to convert on third down. He
wouldn't have had to because Shanahan probably wouldn't have called that play.
But that's the thing about that game. Jimmy Garoppolo missed so many passes. People look at the numbers and say, you know what, he had a good statistical game. Mm-hmm. But he was throwing balls behind receivers the whole night. There was times that guys could have kept and ran, but Deebo Samuels has to reach back and catch the ball, and he was getting tackled instead of going for 60, 70-yard touchdowns. And so that's because Jimmy G was inaccurate with the ball. He just couldn't get the ball in the right spots. And so he showed me that he's not the guy. He is not to me. I mean, they're paying him like he's the guy, but they also put together a contract to where they can get out of the deal. And so if you're telling me you can bring in a Tom Brady and then also potentially bring in a draft pick maybe in the second round or something like that to be the guy going forward, because Brady can play another 2-3 years.
No.
How do you not see that he can play another 2-3 years?
Father Time is undefeated. It hits everybody differently.
TB12, baby.
It hits everybody differently. Yeah. Peyton Manning's last year, he couldn't throw a 10-yard out route. And that was because of injuries.
Tom Brady's been a very, very healthy player his entire career.
He's been healthy, but I just don't know. It's too much unknown for me. And then if you're putting all your eggs in one basket, okay, say you go out there, you get Tom Brady. If y'all don't win the Super Bowl, it's a failure. It's a failure. And then you got to start all the way over because you're not going to sign to a 2-year, 3-year deal. You're going to sign Tom Brady to a 2-3-year deal?
Why not?
At 40, what, 2 years old?
Tom Brady is not falling off yet.
No.
He's not falling off yet.
No.
You got to understand the standard that everybody's looking at Tom Brady at. Everybody looks at him as he's the greatest of all time. He's no longer the greatest of all time, but he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL right now. And Jimmy Garoppolo is not. You know what I mean? Jimmy Garoppolo is not on that caliber of quarterback, and I don't think he's ever going to get there.
The only thing about Brady is he's been there before. I will give you that. He's been to big moments before. But the Brady that we've seen this year, the Brady that we've seen would not help the 49ers any more than what Jimmy Garoppolo did.
You got to go back and watch
it. It wouldn't be no different.
You got to go back and watch him.
It wouldn't be no different.
He's making throws. It definitely would have been a difference. If you put Tom Brady in that game in the Super Bowl for the San Francisco 49ers, they win that game.
The only way, if Tom Brady goes to San Francisco, I would say this. He would attract some people to come with him.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
He could possibly get another big-time receiver
But if Tom Brady doesn't have it anymore, why would a receiver go there? I'm gonna use your own argument against you.
I'm trying to help your argument. I'm just trying to think of ways for him to get there because I don't want him in San Francisco.
Just because you don't want him there doesn't mean it's not a good thing.
I think he might be better off in San Diego.
For Brady.
He might be better off in San Diego.
LA,
If he goes, I mean, I'm sorry. I said San Diego.
LA's team, man, their offensive line is not very good at all. You're going to have to be able to protect Tom Brady. The 49ers' offensive line is pretty good. You know what I mean? They struggled a little bit towards the end of that game in the Super Bowl, but Tom Brady in that offense with San Francisco, they put up numbers, man. Mm-mm. They put up numbers with Jimmy G. you know, I guess.
You have to change the offense. Like, you have to change what they do. And as this time has been, I'm keep saying, he's been in the same system. Guys are stubborn. The older you get,
yeah,
the more stubborn you are. And you think you know more than your head coach. You think you know more than your quarterback or OC.
So you think Tom Brady would go over there to Kyle Shanahan, who was a noted offensive guru.
Yes, he is.
And he would say, you know what? We're going to do it this way.
I think he would put a lot of, how do I want to put this? He would have a lot of input and probably maybe too much input. Well, I think they were butt heads.
Well, I tell you what, we're talking about it now, and the likelihood of it happening, it's probably not that good, just because the way things.
There's so many
options the way he can do. He could, of course, stay in New England. There's a bunch of different teams that would want him, but to
Tennessee,
me, it makes
maybe
a lot of sense. Tennessee, at first, I thought that was a good place for him to go, but can I see Giselle and Tom Brady hanging out in Nashville every day? It doesn't jive with me. But him going back home, that makes a lot of sense to me. And the fact that Jimmy G's contract is so team friendly that they can get out of it and won't cost them much money, to me, it makes too much sense. And there's going to be a bunch of quarterbacks, veteran quarterbacks, that are going to be out there on the market.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be a musical chairs of where guys end up. But to me, San Francisco would be the perfect pick. Indeed it is. I'm Wade Smith, joined by Cecil Short, six-year NFL vet, former Houston Texan, and a lover of all things sports. And I want to talk a little bit about these Astros, man. If you guys have been under a rock, I will mention this as well, though. The Rockets did make a trade last night for Clint Capela, sending him to the Atlanta Hawks. In return, they got Jordan Bell and Robert Covington to be a 3-and-D guy on a death ball, a death lineup that they're trying to emulate with the Golden State Warriors. So we'll be interested to see how that works out and if Daryl Morey has any more moves. We'll talk about that with Brian Geltzeiler from HoopsCredit.com, host of SiriusXM NBA Radio at 9:35. So stay tuned for that. But getting back to these Astros, man, and Major League Baseball in general, Pete Rose asked Major League Baseball for reinstatement, and he cites the fact that the Astros had no punishments for their electronic sign stealing scandal. And this is his quote. He said, "There cannot be one set of rules for Mr. Rose and another for everyone else." Rose's 20-page petition to Manfred, that's what it said. So what are your thoughts on Pete Rose? Should Pete Rose be reinstated into Major League Baseball? Because he's a definite Hall of Famer. He should be there in the Hall of Fame.
No doubt. And for me, and John McClain said something interesting. He said nothing off the field, right, could mess up with what's on the field as far as how they vote for the NFL Hall of Fame.
Yeah, NFL does it a little different.
Now, MLB, with him betting on games.
He bet on his own team, though, man.
On his
he
own team.
He was betting
team,
on his team to win.
But is that considered, like, on the field or off the field?
No, that's considered on the field. But the problem I have with it is, like, all right, he was betting on his team to win. So that means from the perspective of a fan of the team, it's not like he's making moves to cause your team to lose because
purposely
he bet against himself.
Or keeping
you
guys
know what I mean?
Out.
And
or,
if you're somebody that was betting against them or betting for them that's outside looking in, he was betting on his team to win, so you're getting his best foot forward. That's what you're going to get, or just what you're supposed to get in it. That's what you expect out of a major league manager anyway. So, to me, him getting in so much trouble to begin with, I thought they overdid it. I mean, you can't bet on baseball. It's against the rules. It's gambling, and I get that. But for him to get the lifelong ban, it just didn't seem fair, especially.
Yeah.
And so I think he has a case here. I think he has a case.
He has a case, but is it – so what Pete Rose did with gambling on his team and then what the Astros did and the Red Sox did with the technology and the sign stealing, do those weigh evenly, like equally? Or does one look worse than the other?
I think it depends on your perspective. If you're an opposing pitcher for that played against the Houston Astros when they were using – they're banging on garbage cans, you might say, I think you would probably say that it's worse that now this guy knows for sure what my pitch is, what pitch is coming because they're stealing my signs digitally.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to, you know, as opposed to Pete Rose betting on his own team.
And if that's the case, then Pete Rose should be lifted up from his band. I don't see an issue with that. Matter of fact, no, they didn't even get Hinch didn't get in trouble from the MLB.
Well, they both got suspended for a year. AJ Hinch and Jeff Luno got suspended for a year.
They didn't
get
banned.
But no players got in trouble.
No players got suspended.
And no one got banned. No one got banned.
No players got suspended at all. And then they got what? They got to pay $5 million. That's a slap on the wrist for what those owners are bringing in every year.
Yeah.
And if you look at that compared to what Pete Rose did, I'm looking at it like I see a case. I see where he's coming from.
See, that's the thing with the sign-stealing scandal. Like, there's some people like Will Clark that will tell you that it basically was no big deal. Like, they got caught stealing, we didn't.
Yeah.
That's the only difference between what went on back in the day and what people are doing now. And the reporter straight up asked him, like, well, is it different because they used it? They used digital images and cameras in real time to make the things happen. And Will Clark's first response was, well, if you're a pitcher – or you're a catcher and you're realizing that these guys are sitting on pitches, then what you need to do is just switch up your sign scheme so that guys won't. They got to make adjustments. And so, to me, when I hear Will Clark talk about it, it seems like, hey, that's just part of the game, and guys needed to adjust, and it's almost their own fault. But then you hear other guys talk about it, like, you know, you took food off of my table, and guys talking about they're about to retire. You Darvishers. There's plenty of examples where guys are coming out against the Astros saying how bad it is. So it's there's not even a definite feel on how much and how bad of a deal the sign stealing was. To me, the gambling by Pete Rose was gambling on his own team. It's bad because the rules say you cannot gamble at all on your sport. We knew that in football, that you couldn't gamble on.
Make it clear.
They make it clear, very, very clear. But to me, when you compare the two, if one gets in no trouble talking about players, and he wasn't a player at the time, I think that's one thing that Pete Rose has to keep in mind. Like, I know those players didn't get in trouble in this case with the Astros, but you weren't a player at the time. You were a manager, so you're held to a higher standard. And so you being a manager, maybe his case should be this. Hey, Luno and Hinch, they only got 1 year.
1 year.
I shouldn't be still, I don't know how many years it's been. It's probably been 30 years since he's gotten in trouble. And so, or 20, 30 years it's been. So yeah, he has a case, and if they lifted it based off of this information, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
He's betting on his team to win, whereas Luno, not Luno particularly, but Hinch and those players, they were trying to dictate the game, if that makes sense.
Well, I would say this. Hinch apparently, he knew about it but didn't know about it. Tried to stop him. Luno had to have known about it.
Okay.
I mean, he was told by the owner to stop them from doing it, and he didn't relay the message. You know what I mean? He was told by the owner to, if there's something going on in the clubhouse, you need to make sure they're not doing it, and he didn't relay
Crane
the message.
Knew.
So, no, well, Crane, what happened was is when the Red Sox got in trouble, and so everyone around Major League Baseball was put on notice that, hey, when the Red Sox did the Apple Watch deal, they were like, all right, guys are messing around trying to use devices to get over and steal signs, so make sure that none of your teams are doing anything like that. And so that's when Crane relayed it to Luno, like, hey, make sure our guys are not doing anything underhanded, and he didn't relay the message, and then the rest is history.
Now, let me ask you this. In football, snap counts being stolen or being guessed.
Yeah.
Calls on the outside from defensive line. The defensive line can listen to what's going on from the quarterback, correct?
Yeah.
Even to the point where I had offensive coordinators in Jacksonville would listen to the TV copy of the game, and we would switch our calls just so that they can't guess what's going on. So if you can do that to switch the calls, and then I played against Jonathan Joseph where he knew our signals. So we had to switch signals in the middle of the game. Isn't that part of the sport?
It is, but the difference between those two things is when you mention watching the TV copy and picking up on things that were said, that wasn't done in real time. You know what I mean? The ability to disseminate all that information quickly and get it transferred to somebody, that took the ideal of stealing signs to a completely different level. So to me, it's different. To me, it would be like if we could watch film on the sideline of games. You know how when we go to the sideline, we sit there and there's still pictures.
Yeah.
The reason why there's still pictures is because they know it's completely unfair. If you're watching real time film of what's going on the field, you can easily make adjustments and figure out what the team is doing. It's different when you're watching it from up high in a press box or trying to see it from the sideline to make adjustments. And so that's why they don't do that. So to me, when I think about the two sports, that's how it compares. And so the Astros are wrong. Plain and simple, they were wrong with what they did. But at the end of the day, they're trying to move forward, and they're moving forward with a new slogan. A new slogan. And the new slogan is hashtag for the H. And when I first heard the slogan, I said, man, that's dope. But there's a problem. Apparently, there's another franchise in Houston called the Roughnecks that are starting their season this Friday. I think it's Saturday. Here at home. And they have the exact same hashtag. And so
who had it first?
We'll figure it out in a second. Let's listen to the audio of the For the H slogan for the Houston Astros.
Houston is the city we love. A city of heart, resolve, determination. A city we embody as we suit up and step on the field each day. We play for the H on our caps, for the legacy we will build together. We play for our city, our home, for the H.
I loved it, man.
That was hard.
It was hard. I was like, okay, that's H-Town representing.
That was dope.
You gotta love
that was dope.
It. And then all of a sudden, I see a tweet, and I believe it was Landry. Landry Locker put a tweet up, and it showed Houston Roughnecks had the same hashtag for the H. And so you go back and look at the timeline of the Twitter page of Houston Roughnecks, and back in January, they were using that hashtag. It's February the 5th today, I believe. Mm-hmm. They were using that weeks ago for the H. Mm. So apparently, now you would think about franchises that could get away with, you know, possibly stealing something from somebody else. The Astros are the absolute last organization that could do that. Good. And so when I saw that, at first I was excited. Then I had a facepalm moment. Like, come on, Astros, what are we doing here?
Maybe they're working together. Maybe it's like every sports team. So they're getting ready for next year, right?
Yeah.
So maybe the Texans will join in. It'll be for the H. Maybe the Rockets will join in next year for the H. So it'll be like a Houston-wide thing. Maybe they can do that to help save how it looks right now.
I tell you what, it looks bad. If they do that and they save it, you can convince me that, oh, yeah, we plan on doing that out long. But, bro, that I tell you what, they don't have
that's
a lot
bad.
Of cachet right
that's
now
bad,
to give them
man.
The benefit of the doubt. So however you want to slice it, I love the hashtag for the H. It represents the city. I love the video they put out there. And same thing with the Roughnecks, man, for the H. They both going to rep it. The hashtags, hopefully it gives them both extra traffic. You know what I mean? The Roughnecks need as much traffic as they can get, up-and-coming league. And so hopefully it helps them out. But I ain't mad at the Astros, but come on now. Y'all got to do your research and make sure ain't nobody using the hashtag first. But my name is Wade Smith. I'm here with Cecil Shorts. We're filling in for those guys that got a few days off. And we're talking Rockets and their trade. And so we have on the Sports Radio 610 hotline right now, Brian Geltzeiler, HoopsCredit.com host and of Sirius XM NBA Radio. Brian, what was your initial reaction when you got the news of the trade of Clint Capella?
Well, first of all, Wade, Cecil, how we doing today? We good, guys?
Oh, we're doing
yes,
awesome,
sir. We
man.
Good.
Good to hear. Well, I think I'm a big Clint Capella fan. I look at the deal, and you certainly can make a basketball case for why it was a deal that the Rockets wanted to make. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think that the Rockets have put themselves in a tough spot when you look at who they're going to have to go through to advance in the playoffs. You're going to have to figure out a way to guard Anthony Davis somewhat effectively. You're going to have to figure out a way to guard Nikola Jokic somewhat effectively. And, of course, you can't forget about Rudy Gobert in Utah. Capella was the guy that could do that for you. Capella is, to me, the single best big in the league at switching onto guys on the perimeter. He has some excellent defensive skills, and let's face it, as a pick-and-roll diver and a guy that you can throw lobs to offensively, he was useful on that end of the floor also. I understand what the Rockets are after here. him wanting to play more small ball. And I do think that Jordan Bell could be, you know, an unheralded, interesting piece of this deal because he gives you something in terms of just a defensive presence at five if you can get him to work out and you think that that's a spot for him. He's got some playoff experience, and he certainly has had flashes there if you can catch lightning in a bottle there. But nonetheless, I look at this trade and feel like it's, you know, for the Rockets, again, they'll make a basketball case for it. And Covington's a guy that gives you a LeBron defender. He gives you a Kawhi defender, even though he's only shooting 34.6% from three this year. And the Rockets love to throw up those threes, but he'll help you there defensively. I don't know that I like it at the expense of Clint Capella. And I do think that we have to understand that there were some cost savings involved as well. And listen, you get an idea in the next 30 hours or so how much cost savings played a role in this, because if the Rockets don't do anything with the extra $12 million that they were able to get under the salary cap with this deal, I think you kind of look at things and wonder, you know, this is maybe more about cost than it is about basketball.
Brian, the more I think about it, how much better are the Rockets today than yesterday? I'm not sold on it. The more I think about it, we've been talking about it all morning, the more I hear about it, I'm not sold that they're that much better with Robert Covington and Jordan Bell and possibly somebody else, because, you know, Daryl Morey is probably not done yet, than having Clint Capella here. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, Cecil, in the moment, I think they're worse. But if they do something and they bring somebody in to fill for Clint Capella who can, you know, play an interesting role, and I do, you know, Daryl Morey has proved to us time and time again that he pulls rabbits out of his hat all the time.
Yeah.
So they're not, you know, we can't assume them to be dumb, but all we can do is go with what we know at this moment. And what we do know at this moment is that this is probably not a stronger basketball team. Listen, they are 15th in the league in defensive efficiency right now. They've certainly trended up recently there. Capella's a part of that. He's probably their best defensive player. And as much as I love P.J. Tucker, I think in the way the game's being played today, he is your perfect stretch four. He's only 6'5". He's an excellent corner three shooter. And he scraps and he fights and he plays bigger than he is and he guards bigger guys. And you can ask him to do that at the four and guard the perimeter at times. And for playing small stretches against some of these really big guys, you certainly can do that. But to ask him to do it full time, that's a rough ask. That's going to be very, very tough on him. And you know, listen, Covington's going to, you know, be a guy that's essentially going to play that stretch four spot next to Tucker to keep Gordon on the floor. The problem with this is they did this to get bigger on the perimeter, and Covington, it's like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. They're not going to be big enough on the perimeter, even with Covington. So it's kind of like, to get where they wanted to get with this trade, they were going to have to fundamentally change how they were built. This is a small step in that direction, but in terms of what you have to get through in a Western Conference in the playoffs this year, it's not easy. And you know, listen, for where the Rockets are right now, it's, you know, you got to be careful you don't end up finishing the season at 5 or 6 and having to play in a first round on the road. I mean, they're at 5 right now behind Utah. And listen, it's going to be tough to get to the NBA Finals in the Western Conference. It's going to be a whole lot tougher if you have to do it all on the road. And I'll say this about the Rockets, because of how they shoot threes, because of the volume of threes that they shoot, they're capable of beating anyone. But if you're going to have to come out at a 5 seed to be able to try to go to the finals, there's no way you're capable of beating everyone.
Brian, earlier this week, it was rumored that the Rockets were trying to get Kevon Looney to be part of this trade. You mentioned earlier that there's $12 million that are still available, that a spot could be filled there. Is Kevon Looney a guy that's still in play, or was that ever a reality for the Rockets?
I mean, listen, I think if the problem with the Rockets in getting Kevon Looney is that the Warriors are not going to give him away. They see a lot of value in Kevon Looney because he's quite frankly part of the culture there. Now, all right, culture is probably an overused word for a team that is 12-39, but when they get Stephen Clay back, it's, you know, this is going to be a very different situation very quickly. So I think that the problem for the Rockets is they just don't have a lot to be able to go get guys with right now. They're really bereft of assets. And you know, they threw another first-round pick in here. They've thrown a lot of first-round picks out in the name of trying to get this team to win an NBA title. And that's fine, but when you look at the large majority of teams in recent years that have won NBA titles, the one common element has been the luxury tax. Owners willing to pay above what the salary cap says to put, you know, ultra-competitive teams on the field, on the court that are competing for NBA championships. The Rockets are going the other way. The Rockets are are shaving money off. So it doesn't all add up and make a lot of sense when you do that and you look at who they're going to have to compete with. You know, listen, we have, you know, in the next, again, 30 hours, the Lakers may very well do something. The Clippers may very well do something.
Yeah.
Okay? One thing I can tell you about those two teams, and you're going to have to go through at least one of them, if not both of them, neither of those ownership groups are going to worry about taking money off. They're fine adding money. They're fine going into the tax. They're fine going deep into the tax if they can pull something off and that's what it requires. So I think you kind of have to look at the big picture here with the Rockets. They want you to look at it from one angle, but there's another angle in terms of financial savings that is not a great angle to be looking at. You know, it's not a great angle for the Rockets right now, and it doesn't speak all that well to their ability to get through the West and be able to go to an NBA final.
You know, the stigma with James Harden is that in big games in the playoffs, he doesn't come through like a LeBron, like a Kobe used to do, or Kevin Durant, whatever the case may be. With the roster they have now, does this put more pressure on James Harden to come through in the playoffs? And with what you just told us, I'm not sure if he's equipped as much as he would have.
There's a lot. Listen, I think there's a lot of pressure on James Harden in the first place. I think having Westbrook come aboard actually took a little bit of less pressure off him because it's not on his shoulders the whole time. And they've made some changes to accommodate Westbrook that have been good changes. Listen, they've played very fast this year. They were one of the slower teams in the league the last couple of years. They have upped their tempo to be able to, because if you're going to have Russell Westbrook on your team, it doesn't make sense to do that and not play fast. So they've done that in the name of maybe playing a little bit less isolation. But nonetheless, when it comes time to make big shots in big spots in the playoffs, we know who that's going to fall on. James Harden. That was going to exist whether Capella was there or Capella was not there. What's interesting about this is they want to make this trade. They're willing to acknowledge the fact that they weaken themselves defensively. They want to make this trade about, we think we're going to be so much better offensively, and it's going to benefit Westbrook to have more driving lanes. And listen, I get all that. But by the same token, when you look at Capella's offensive strengths, he's a very good screen setter. You can always throw lobs to him. He's an excellent pick-and-roll diver. And he hangs in that dunker spot and kind of stays out of the way. Like, I think there's a lot of smokescreen going on to cover for what really has been a move towards cost savings that they can put a basketball spin on. I really believe that, guys.
We're speaking with Brian Geltzeiler, HoopsCritic.com host on SiriusXM NBA Radio. And you just mentioned Clint Capella and his offensive strengths. But what would you say about Capella's progression as a player over the past few years offensively in his game? Because to me, he struggled with making the leap, the strides that I think he needed to be to make to, in order to still be remaining on the roster and help the team get over to that next level.
I actually think I like him a lot at 25 years old. I think the thing about a guy like Clint Capella is you have to realize he is what he is. He's never going to be a guy that shoots the ball well from the perimeter. That's not who he is. His game is around the basket. And I think when you look at his value, if he can be, he doesn't have to be a stud offensive player, because again, I think that's asking more of him than really what he's capable of. I mean, you look at him offensively, do we need him to do any more than shoot 63% from the field? Because that's what he does. And you know, a guy that's got averaging 14 points and 14 rebounds at almost two blocks a game, you look at that value, I think there's a lot of value there for him. I really do. I think for the Rockets here, and the other thing is this, the contract's not bad for what he brings. Guy's 14 and 14, and he's making $17 million a year. It's not a terrible contract. But I think for the Rockets, ultimately, they built this thing around two stars. It's really hard to be able to stay under the tax and field a competitive team when you have two guys that are making an excess $80 million combined, and you got another guy that's making $17 million, which pushes you over $100 million for three players, and how you round out the rest of a roster. And I don't think this is about Clint Capella and who he was offensively. I know he averaged 16 last year, but again, you have to look at the fact that he's taken one less shot a game. He took 11 shots a game last year. He's taking 10 shots a game this year. The opportunities aren't there as much. And yes, his free throw shooting should be a lot better than than it is. It's at its worst number since 2015, 2016. So I get there is some stuff that is kind of flatlined with him here. But I guess my point that I'm making is that he is what he is. And what he is pretty darn good for this team. So I look at the role that he plays, and I think it's a very, very tough role to look to fill someone else in on. And I think the Rockets are going to have a hard time doing that, certainly have a hard time doing it in the next 28 or so hours.
Overall, how do you think he's going to do in Atlanta matched with Trae Young for one? And then also, who would you say overall won this trade between the four teams involved?
I think that Atlanta and Minnesota both did very well in this trade. Minnesota didn't do as well as they wanted to, but ultimately getting that first round pick for Covington, I think was what they had to do. And first round picks are not being thrown around all that liberally here coming into the trade deadline. And I think for Atlanta, they got a 25-year-old player that's going to make their team better going forward than they can pair with Trae Young. You know, they had trouble at the center position. Alex Len wasn't getting him done. He's in the last year of a deal anyway. And Lloyd Pierce felt compelled to have to use John Collins there a lot. And that's John Collins playing out of position. And I think for John Collins, there's a significant difference in what he's going to do for you defensively when you have him at the four than when you have him at the five. And ultimately, you got to remember one thing about the Atlanta Hawks and Trae Young. Guys, I don't want to be mean about it when I refer to Trae Young, but I'm not sure I'd let this dude guard my spot at the bank, let alone let him defend some of the point guards in the NBA. All right? He is a poor, poor defensive player. And so when you look at that and say, okay, how am I going to cover for a poor defensive player? Getting one of the better bigs in the league defensively on the back line helps you cover for that. And Collins was a good defensive player. He wasn't capable of that. So I think Atlanta won this deal. I really do. I like what Atlanta did. Listen, for Atlanta, ultimately, it was going to come down to Capella or Drummond. And I think in the end, Capella makes $10 million less and brings a skill set, maybe not the rebounder that Drummond is, but he's close, and he brings a skill set that's similar at a much better price. And I will also tell you guys this. There are four or five teams right now in the Eastern Conference that have made an enormous exhale that the Boston Celtics didn't find a way to get involved here and get Clint Capella. Because if the Celtics were able to add Clint Capella and not have to sacrifice Hayward, Tatum, Brown, Walker, or Smart, they were going to be the odds-on favorite in the Eastern Conference to go to the finals.
Wow. Looking at Minnesota, they got that first-round pick, and I know Minnesota's heavy on getting D'Angelo Russell to town. Now, the Warriors have been the arch-nemesis for the Rockets for a while. Is this a way for Minnesota to use that first-round pick and flip it maybe this offseason, closer to the draft, and get D'Angelo Russell?
The Warriors are not taking this first-round pick for D'Angelo Russell. Okay. Because ultimately, for the money to work, Minnesota's going to have to send Wiggins there. And here's the thing with Wiggins. The Warriors are not adverse to bringing Andrew Wiggins into their program. Andrew Wiggins, forget about the money for a minute. In terms of as a basketball player with no pressure on him, he'll be better than Barnes, but not as good as Durant. And for that team, that's fine. But ultimately, Wiggins' contract is considered a liability around the league. So if you want us to send you Russell and you're going to send us Wiggins, you got to give us something more than just a lottery-protected first-round pick that the Nets have. So ultimately, the Minnesota's going to have to give their pick for this year unprotected if they want to get D'Angelo Russell and package it with Wiggins. I can understand right now why they said no. I think that's a deal that's going to liven up as we come into draft week, and Minnesota has a little bit of a better vision of, A, where that draft spot is, and, B, who they're going to get with it. I think right now the unknown of trading the unprotected pick becomes an issue for them, because if it ends up being the number one pick, you never wanted to trade it in the first place. If you end up sitting there at 6 or 7, you look at it a little bit differently. So I do think that that's what it comes down to. But I will tell you, I think that that's going to happen. I think that assuming Minnesota doesn't hit top two, top three in the lottery come May, I think when we look at draft week, you could very well see Andrew Wiggins and the pick Minnesota has in the first round going to Minnesota for D'Angelo Russell. Because keep one other thing in mind about D'Angelo Russell. Just like the Clippers, when they turned around and traded 5 firsts for Paul George, understood we're trading 5 firsts to bring in not only Paul George, but to lock up Kawhi Leonard. Minnesota's going to look at trading that lottery pick with Wiggins as something that keeps Karl-Anthony Towns happy and in town. And that's enormous for them if they're going to have any kind of immediate future.
Brian, awesome insight, man. I appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time to school us on what's going on with these Rockets and this trade, man. You can catch him on SiriusXM NBA Radio, hoopscritic.com. Appreciate you, Brian, and hopefully we hear from you soon in the very near future, man.
Guys, I look forward to it. It's been a pleasure visiting with you both, and we'll do it again soon.
Perfect, man. And so, man, listen, man, that he gave some insight that
he was
really
awesome.
Listen, when he said that the team didn't get better, I'm looking at it from this perspective. I should have asked him this, but the Astros are 10-1 without Capella. And I know he was really, really high on Capella and what he brings to teams, but what he brings to this particular team, it hasn't been working. You know what I mean? The Rockets, and I don't know if it's fool's gold or not, I didn't have enough time to ask that question, but the fact that they went 10-1 playing this small ball lineup, I think overall they're better as a team right now. It's going to help them get to probably a 3 seed in the West. That's what I think is going to happen out of this. Now, how does it help them when they play in the playoffs against the bigger teams, like the two LA teams?
Yeah.
That's when I think it's going to catch up with them, unless they can figure out a way to get in another big like a Kevon Looney or somebody similar. So, but he gave some good insight, man. I appreciate everything he had to say.
Yeah, he was awesome, like he normally is. But it's going to be interesting to see what Morey does. I think they are looking for, and obviously all of us think Morey's going to make one more move for maybe a center, maybe a big piece, maybe a Kevon Looney, like you mentioned, maybe somebody else out in the market. But it's going to be interesting to see how he makes this work. And I think he's doing the best he can to figure out, okay, this Capella thing wasn't working for us. Let's try something else. Let's try something different. And they're going to run with it. So we're going to see, like I said, mentioned earlier, they got time to have some cohesiveness and make things work. But will it be enough to get them where they want to go? I'm not sure.
I tell you what, man. Now, Brian made a great point. If they don't make any moves, if the Rockets don't make any moves in the next about 25 hours or whatever it is until the deadline hits, that's going to speak to the fact that this move to move Capella had a lot to do with money and not necessarily about getting the team better. And there was rumors that came out that Tillman Fertitta was looking to shave some salary. So if that's the case, if you're a Rockets fan, that's got to be pretty damn disappointing. So hopefully that isn't the case. They can bring in somebody else to put in some good work for these Rockets, and we will see. But for Chris Jones on the boards has held us down all day. Cecil Shorts, I'm Wade Smith. We got In the Loop coming up next with Landry Locker and John Lopez. And it's always real, fellas.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.